Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back at the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Joe Sheehan's on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. Baseball America and Sports Illustrated are two places where you can read his work, and you can hear him right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. You've got one job today, Joe Sheehan. It's to use that giant pulsating brain of yours to fix what's wrong with the Cubs. Go.
Sorry, can't hear you. That's the book I read. It's really funny because they're 45-40. You look at the underlying performance, it's closer to 47-38. They have lost a fair number of close games. It's not a strong bullpen. It has always felt to me, and this goes back to really even the 2016 team, they have a lot of good hitters in search of the one leadoff type man. And I don't mean speed necessarily so much as somebody who essentially his OBP is a greater skill than slugging. And, you know, Ben Zobrist was that guy for a little while. He didn't always bat leadoff. You look at Jason Hayward with the power not really coming along. He's kind of had that skill set. They've used Schwarber with some success in the leadoff spot. But it's always felt to me like the lineup is less than the sum of its parts because they're missing that one 380 OBP doubles and walks type leadoff guy.
Yeah, I'm with you, Joe. It goes back to something, too, that Brenneman said when they were playing the Reds a little while ago. He had threw some tortured excuse of Addison Russell and the problems that he suffered through. He also mentioned that Russell's 95 RBI season a couple of years ago, you know, in an offense that won the World Series, was a mark of an incredible hitter. And I, you know, while that was a nice season for Addison Russell offensively, if you look at the way to runs created plus for Schwarber, Almora, Russell, and Happ in AAA, only one of them is over 100, and that's Schwarber at 2 points over. There just doesn't seem to be a roundedness to the bottom, I don't know, quarter or third of the lineup.
Yeah, this was a problem last year where that group of hitters didn't really come along. And collectively, these guys are hitting better this year. You look at Wilson Contreras as having, you know, obviously made the All-Star team. He's played very well. You know, Chris Bryant, I think there's starting to be a little bit of, I don't say backlash, but I've seen a lot of negativity about Bryant when he's basically the same hitter he's been throughout his career. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've said enough about Albert Almora to be disappointed with his development as well. But I don't know. It's an offense that if you look at the underlying numbers, third in OBP, fourth in slugging, fifth in runs scored, there's some missing runs there that you can put up to sequencing or, you know, like I say, not having necessarily everybody in the lineup clicking at once. But I don't think the offense is really the problem here. I think the run prevention is the greater problem.
When you mentioned Almora, I know that when we've discussed this before, it's been sort of a binary situation between the Schwarber people and the Almora people, and you being one of the latter. And it's always been easy to say, you know, sure, Almora hasn't come along, but you could always lean on he hasn't gotten the regular playing time to establish himself. When can we not say that anymore? When, in the aggregate, have you seen enough? Or is that something you could always look back on at a critical time in his career to say, because he didn't get it then, now you never get that opportunity back?
Yeah, I mean, if I want to be an advocate for Albert Almora, I can say that in 17 and 18, when J.A. Happ and Ben Zobrist were a larger part of the mix in the outfield, and there was, on a daily basis, this tension between Schwarber's playing time and Almora's playing time, that there could have been a development issue. But you're looking at a guy right now who 251 plate appearances, 80 games played. He's played a lot, and he hasn't hit. And I think Albert Almora can hit for, say, a 90 OPS plus or weighted runs created plus and still be a very good player, a contributor, because the defense is that good. But at 75, you really have a hard time getting into the lineup. But I do think he's gotten the greatest stretch of playing time this year that he's ever gotten, and he hasn't hit. I think you've got to take that seriously.
talk with Joe Sheehan here, trying to fix the Cubs lineup as best we can. Joe, how would you best relate the Cubs' potential war chest to go get somebody, or really anything, doesn't matter necessarily what it is, in a trade versus some others that will be shopping to add come July 31?
If there were a Verlander out there on the market, if the Nationals had fallen off the pace and put Scherzer or Strasburg out there, I would say that the Cubs don't have what it takes to get that type of player from a farm system standpoint. Because the best players on the market are going to be, you know, probably Madison Bumgarner, Will Smith, you look maybe, you know, Marcus Stroman is not on that level of performance, but he's got a year of control left. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be able to get those guys for maybe even unrated prospects. You look at guys who are outside the top 100. I don't know that if it came down to the best prospects available for the best players available, the Cubs would be in that market. But because the top guys aren't really going to command those prices, the Cubs can be competitive. It's not a deep farm system at this point. I can also make the argument, as somebody who likes Adbert Alzolay, despite what happened last night, Alzolay over 15 starts, you know, might give you approximately what a Stroman's going to give you over 15 starts, and you're not giving up the next 6 years of his career. So it's a tough spot. There are going to be teams that can both pay more in talent and take back more in salary. And you know, I think the Cubs will make some minor deals. I'd be surprised if they made a major one.
Anthony Rizzo said something interesting a couple days ago where he said, look, the whole idea of trading for Craig Kimbrell puts a premium on scoring early, getting ahead and saying to the other team, you know, this is a short game now, and pressuring them. And I don't know the numbers behind it about when runs are scored and when good – I know good offenses just score their runs, and good players in their turns through the order tend to score their runs. But is Rizzo right? I mean, is there something to be said for the teams with these kick-ass bullpens getting on a team, maybe forcing a team into their decision chain earlier, knowing what's coming?
I don't know. Ask Mets fans.
they're too sad.
This is the argument for trading for a closer, that it's an attempt to be a sophisticated argument. Like, well, he's not just replacing the guy in the eighth inning. The eighth inning goes to the seventh, and the seventh, and all of a sudden you have a deeper bullpen. And yes, that's true. Having Edwin Diaz or Craig Kimbrell ahead of the seventh reliever in a bullpen, in either of those two bullpens, is an upgrade. But do I think there's a psychological effect? No, not really. You're adding a good player to your bullpen, and that's going to be a good thing. I think people look back to those 2014-15 Royals teams with Herrera, Holland, and Wade Davis eviscerating people at the back end. The lesson from those years isn't you need to have a 7-8-9.
Right.
The lesson from those years is when your bullpen stops allowing runs, you tend to win. So it's not about who you have back there. It's just about, do you have the guys that put it together and have a big year? And, you know, bullpens are flaky, guys. You know, take Holland, Rivera, and Herrera and Davis, for that matter. You know, Davis is not very good this year with the Rockies. Holland got hurt. He's been okay for the Diamondbacks this year. Herrera got hurt, bounced to the D.C. and now Chicago. There's always going to be a lot of variance with bullpens, which is why when you trade for a reliever, you sign a reliever, you're taking on a significant amount of risk. My issue with the Kimbrel signing was never, it's not going to make the Cubs bullpen better at all. It's, I don't know how good Craig Kimbrel is at this point. Hmm.
You mentioned that run prevention is the thing that's maybe bugging the Cubs more than anything else, maybe more than the offense. How would you fix the defensive portion of their run prevention? Obviously, it's pitching and defense, but are there tweaks? Are there easier spots than others to go ahead and help and find a little better defense in places?
The Cubs don't have the depth that they did 2 years ago at this time. I guess you could conceivably call Hap up and make him part of the mix, but he's not really going to be an upgrade anywhere except maybe left field. Yeah. And please don't make me argue about the left fielder anymore.
Never.
You basically have an offensive defensive choice at second base. Do you want to play Russell every day? Or do you want to play David Bodie and kind of, you know, get the better bat in there? Russell is still, you know, a slightly below average hitter. He's a great defensive second baseman. The Cubs defensive, when the Cubs play Russell and Baez, that is as good a defensive middle infield as you're going to find in Major League Baseball. So if it's about maximizing the defense, you're playing Russell, you're playing Almora, you're not going to be able to do anything. You're committed to Schwarber in left field. I think that's about as good as it's going to get. The Cubs defense, remember, guys, in 2016, the defense drove the run prevention. It wasn't a high strikeout staff, but they had, I believe, the best defensive efficiency for any defense in, you know, 40 years or something. I don't think the defense will ever be that good again, but it's when they have the decision. They make the lineup every day. So do we want to play the defense with Almora and Russell, or do we want to play Bodhi and somebody else in the outfield?
The international signing period has begun today, and there's all sorts of names that are being tied to teams already. Apparently, the Cubs have agreed to terms with three players in the top 30. A lot of 16-year-olds here of value, and Jesse Sanchez of MLB is reporting the White Sox are expected to sign Yolbert Sanchez out of Cuba and a guy named Elijah Tatis, who happens to be Fernando's brother. What is a good way for fans? How should fans look at International Signing Day and what it means with these guys being so young and so raw?
They shouldn't.
Not at all.
I appreciate that there are people whose work I enjoy and respect out there busting their humps to get information on these guys, but they're baseball zygotes. And beyond that, they're baseball zygotes who were probably committed to, you know, a year and a half ago when were barely even zygotes. I was having a discussion. I run a score sheet team with a friend of mine, and we were talking about the July 2 signings, whether we have to be worried about them. And I'm like, you know, every now and then one of these guys will advance quickly. You look at Wander Franco, who's the best prospect in baseball now. You look at the way Fernando Tatis Jr. came through. He's 20 now. He's one of the best stories in baseball. It's not that that doesn't happen. It's that on July 2nd of a given year, very few people can tell you who 3 years from now are going to be the top guys in that field. Think about, I remember maybe 5 years ago now, we were all talking about Kevin Maiton, who was taken by the Braves. He was supposed to be the next big thing to come out of the July 2 signings. And now I want to say he's in A-ball with the Angels, and nobody's ever heard of him. There was a guy came up with the Yankees when I was still a Yankee fan, Jackson Melion.
He was a Cub. He was a Cub.
He eventually bounced to the Cubs.
Yeah. And you know what? That we had him, Joe, funny story. I don't know. He was a spring training story 1 year. So we said, hey, let's put him on. And that's when I learned my lesson. Find out if a guy speaks English before you hand him a phone.
Hey, you put me on all the time. So, you know, clearly you can't have that fancy standard. But no, I think I know that we've gone back. There are a lot of people who have gone back to look at prospect lists to say, okay, you know, how good did BA or MLB or Prospectus do at ranking prospects? I'm not sure there's ever been a look back at, like, the guys who were considered to be the top July 2 prospects to say how good are we at projecting those a while out. And I wouldn't want to do that to judge the guys doing it because, again, it's an impossible task. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know if there's just any signal at all on July 2nd, 2018, or excuse me, 2019, about the players who were good on July 22nd, 2023. I honestly don't know, guys, but I can tell you this. There's absolutely nothing an analyst who hasn't seen these players can tell you about them. This is entirely a scouting project.
I am absolutely thrilled that I've got a chance to go to see Dylan Cease make his debut at Guaranteed Rate tomorrow afternoon, first one of the doubleheader. I wonder, Joe, though, Cease is coming up in a place where he's not had a whole great run of success at AAA. It's not like he looks like Michael Kopech did when he came up even. Is there a comp for that? Are you cool with Cease coming up in the midst of what's been a little bit of a ride of the struggle bus?
I think we kicked around Cease a couple of weeks ago. I have no idea who's pitching well at AAA because they're using golf balls at AAA.
Yeah.
I don't think we can look at the performance of these guys necessarily and know how well they've pitched. If the White Sox, have seen enough, or if they're getting enough information, whether it's from StatCast or from their people on the ground, that they trust Cease coming up to the majors, I'm fine with that. The scouting, it's never been a great idea to scout the stat line, to scout the box scores.
Sure.
But if you're scouting AAA, especially AAA pitchers this year, you really have to almost ignore those stat lines and just go to the displayed skills.
Joe, thanks as always, man. Appreciate it. Talk next week.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan of Baseball America and Sports Illustrated.
That's a good one. I keep on forgetting. Well, not forgetting, just kind of like it escapes my mind.
That they're using that ball?
That they're using that ball at AAA. That's a good reminder for a lot of things. Obviously, it doesn't excuse any performance necessarily from Cease, but trust your evaluators. You know, don't scout a stat line. That is absolutely great advice for looking at guys who move level to level in this game.
We've got a lot to do when we come back. I am told we have a piece of something from the Les Grobstein Overnight Show. show.
Excellent.
And I have not heard it. I purposely did not listen to it because I want to hear it for the first time when we come back.
Yeah, we got to do that. And we've also got to check in with our guy, Jay Zawoski. I was floored with how the Blackhawks responded to free agency.
Yeah, last thing I thought would happen was they would spend a multi-million dollar chunk of money on a veteran goaltender.
What's that mean for Corey Crawford? We'll ask our own Jay Zawoski when we get back, plus some Les Grobstein gold. Uh-huh. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Greg checks in from the state of New Jersey. What's up, Greg?
Hey, Grobs, how are you?
What's going on?
What do you think about the free agency now with the Breadman signing with the Rangers?
We knew that because of the money that he would be getting, that unfortunately it wasn't going to happen. Artemi Panarin, he's going to the Rangers. He got a huge contract. He's a good player. I think the Hawks probably made a mistake when they got rid of him, but what they did was they wanted to end up bringing a couple of people back in this direction, and they did. And obviously, he's going to be a Ranger.
Dogs love the Grobber Show.
They do. They really do.
Especially these are stressful times, as you know, for dogs with all the fireworks going off and dogs getting all messed up because of the explosions everywhere. One thing that generally makes them happy and they'll sing along in the background is when they hear the dulcet tones of Les Grobstein.
I'm glad you reminded me of that because with the dog now, and I'm a dog step parent recently, and it is the preparations going into July 4th for this.
Is dog step like dubstep?
Yeah, same thing. Okay. You yell and scream a lot. There's a lot of record scratches. Okay. But it's a great idea. Maybe instead of like loading up the dog on trazodone or something like that, I could pick up a bunch of copies of the Les Grobstein Show because dogs love it. Everybody loves it.
Yep.
But dogs are especially soothed by Les Grobstein's tones. Mm-hmm. Maybe we just play that.
Sometimes he speaks directly to the dogs in code, and they will eventually do his bidding for them.
It was nice of the caller to put the phone as close to the dog as possible after
he finished.
Artemi
Panarin is going to the Rangers.
Asking his question. A lot going on in the NHL, as you could tell from the Les Grobstein Show. But if you're interested in some more Cubs conversation, we'll have that for you at 11. And oh, by the way, Cubs manager Joe Maddon is going to join Lawrence Holmes at noon today because it's Joe Day. That's what we do. We talk to Joe Sheehan at 10, and then Joe Maddon is kind enough to come on the station at noon. So you won't miss anything if you're tuned in the rest of the day. However, I thought I had missed something when I saw that the Blackhawks had gone out and signed a goaltender, a Vezina Trophy finalist, for $5 million. I had no idea that was on the radar for them. I immediately was concerned for Corey Crawford's health and well-being, and I didn't know if something had happened to him. I wonder if it struck our own Jay Zawoski that way when you found out that the Blackhawks had been in and signed a big-time goaltender.
Yeah, a lot of things struck me there because it was so out of left field. You didn't hear them mention the word goalie. Stan Bowman never said it before the season. No one really speculated they were looking for one. They had just signed Colin Delia, who had played pretty well in his limited role. So, yeah, it was curveball from Stan Bowman. And you're right. My first thought was, what's wrong with Crawford? Yep. Or are they trading Crawford? Or is he retiring or what? But from what I'm told, it's just an insurance policy. They just don't want the season to fall apart if Crawford predictably gets hurt again. So they brought in this guy who's just as good, maybe better, than Corey Crawford at this point.
And Robin Leonard has also had his share of off-ice issues, correct? He was at one point detoxing from a series of addictions, was he not?
He was. There was no specific incident, just to be clear. There was no, you know, nothing happened legally with him. It was just something that he'd been struggling with depression, anxiety, ADHD. He, to cope with those things, he was drinking heavily, medicating with pills, and finally just said, I've got to take care of this. And he went to rehab and detox, and he's been clean ever since and bounced back with his best season ever. So, of course, these things are never cured, but it seems to be under control right now. He seems to be in a good place. So this tandem of goalies is as good as it gets in hockey.
What do you expect the split to be? Crawford started something, I want to say it was 53 games last season, and you saw the issues that had kind of assailed them when he was out. Like you said, you don't want to lose 8 out of 10, but is it fair to assume that Corey Crawford is your one of ones, or might something more even time be in the offing?
It's really tough to judge Corey Crawford's season last year because the defense was so terrible that the numbers look worse than they actually were. The Hawks' defense was terrible. It's gotten better this offseason up front and on the blue line, so it should be easier for Corey Crawford to be a goalie. I think it's his net to start. But if Leonard starts outperforming him, I don't think they're going to hesitate to make that switch and sort of shift the focus. And look, it's probably good for Corey Crawford at age 35, considering everything he's been through.
He's 35 already.
Yeah. He was drafted by Mike Smith. That was forever. That was Alpo Suhonen era when Corey Crawford was drafted. That's so long ago. He doesn't seem that old because he's only been around full-time since 2011, 2012. But yeah, he's 35 years old. So at this point, maybe it's better for him to just do a full split or maybe give Leonard the bulk of the starts.
I agree.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
Way to get that in.
Yeah, he was nodding the whole time.
The entire time. Mm-hmm. No, he's always had a big
Jay's right. Yep.
Alpo Suhonen
guy, that's a narrative. That is an ongoing Blackhawks storyline. It's going to be one of these game-by-game things, and it's going to be every morning skate. We're going to be wondering who was the first off by getting a look at how they're managing some of these things. And does it mean that you're going to have a specified number of dates? Does it mean you play the hot goaltender to stay hot and have momentum? You know, I don't know how Colleton looks at that.
Well, I think if a guy's playing really well, you keep playing him. I mean, goaltending is confidence is a factor. You know this, Dan. Your son's a goalie.
Yeah, look at the guy. Look at the guy who won the Stanley Cup last year.
Right, and when things start to pile up on you negatively. Ugh. It's really hard to bounce back from that. You can look at all the numbers you want, but the mental aspect of goaltending is a huge thing. So I have no problem with that. If Leonard's playing better for a week, then he gets the starts. If it's Crawford, he gets the starts. Look, they're professionals. The competition's part of the game. And if, you know, Patrick Kane is in a scoring slump, they're not going to keep throwing him out there on the first line until he gets it right. So it should be the same way with goalies.
I've kind of, you know, with the other additions that they've made, we were talking Blackhawks yesterday morning when Ryan Carpenter was signed to the deal that he got. I like a return to some size with some of the forwards and maybe a little bit of a return to some of a defense first mentality with bottom six type guys that can mix in and be that third line kind of presence. I wonder, though, if the offensive potential from some of those makes you worry.
I think the offense is fine. The offense was fine last year. They've got a lot of guys that can score. They added international signing Dominic Kubalik, who is expected to be kind of like Dominic Cahoon, but probably a little bit better, a little bit more of a scorer.
So, of course, you have to comp him to another guy named Dominic just because.
Well, there's so many.
Because you're so lazy.
Yeah, Dominic and Jules. But, yeah, so he's a guy they're looking to score. Brendan Perlini, now that he's sort of found his legs in Chicago, they're over there. I found him. He'll start scoring a little more often, I think. He was a 20-goal scorer in Arizona. So offense isn't the issue. It's keeping the puck out of the back of the net. And now you add Calvin DeHaan. You add Olli Maatta. And Henry Okaharju at some point, I think. Probably,
kind of sounded like kind of maybe on that.
Yeah, and you have two all-star goalies. So all of a sudden, your defense is a lot better.
And with the Leonard deal, it looks like you keep some of the cap potential around if for next season, next time around, when you've got to get DeBrincat under deal. I mean, if he goes off I mean, what's the ceiling for him? Is it 40? Is it 45?
Well, he's already pushed past 40.
Yeah, I mean, hell, this guy has put the puck in the net, and if that takes more cash to lock him down long term, they've kept that ability around.
Well, he scored 40 this year and went long stretches without scoring. So I think 50-55 is reasonable for him.
Wow.
I mean, he is one of the most natural goal scorers I've ever seen. Despite his size, he doesn't play a small game. He's never going to be a big assist guy. He'll be one of those like 55 and 30 type players.
And you
but
know
that's
what?
That's a $9 million, $10 million player right there.
And actually, if what Stan Bowman told us about what he wants in his offense comes to fruition, if guys like Shaw, if guys who are willing to provide traffic in front of the net, DeBrincat is going to be the beneficiary of better luck. He's going to have more opportunities to jump on a puck that squirts off a pad. He's going to have those because he's in those slippery areas. He finds those ways. So if just by puck luck, if a harder working, greasier offense allows him just as a function of opportunity, there's another 6-7 goals in there.
That's definitely true. And just the fact that there's more talent up front now, too. Instead of David Kampf or Dominic Ahoon or whoever, he's got Andrew Shaw on his wing maybe, or Patrick Kane on his wing maybe, and that's going to help him too. They've always been sort of, you know, piecing together that top line right wing, Drake Caggiula sometimes, maybe Brandon Saad now and again on the left wing. They can't seem to find that permanent fixture on the top two lines on the wing. Maybe Shaw's the guy. I know it's not ideal, but he's capable of being adequate in a top six role, which is more than what they had last year.
You want hockey talk, you get hockey talk on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And the segment sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. We've got Eddie Jackson of the Bears scheduled to join us at 11:20 after some more in-depth Cubs stuff coming up at 11. But straight ahead is the Midday Midway. If you are a car guy, if you like exotic, fast, expensive automobiles, there is an opportunity for you that is coming up. And I have a television show to recommend that was recommended to me by an old friend who said, you have got to watch this. You will love it. And I watched it. And I love it.
And I can't get you to watch Arrested Development.
And I want to recommend this show because it's really cool.
There's a movie made exactly about our next segment and a high-tech save by a dad. We've got Dad Save on the Midday Midway. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. And so far on the first portion of the show, a lot of concern about the Cubs after yet another stumble. Now, that was more of a face plant. That's a fall down the stairs and land on your face is what that was. And it was all kinds of ugly for many reasons. There were a lot of guys who contributed to that effort or lack thereof. And we're asking some larger picture questions now with Cole Hamels injured for what appears to be a significant period of time, and with the roster potentially in a little bit of flux, this is times for some reasonable nervousness, I think, if you are a Cub observer.
We talked to Joe Sheehan, tried to fix the roster as best we could. His opinion that run prevention is the thing that needs fixing first and foremost. It is Joe Day, so Joe Madden's going to be on with Lawrence at noon. Definitely want to tune in for that if you want to know what's up with the Cubs and get Joe's perspective on things. Talk a little hockey as well. Chimed in with Robin Lehner and find out exactly what that move means for the Blackhawks and for Corey Crawford. Jay seems to think it's a good one, and I follow Jay in all of my hockey endeavors. So, thumbs up. So there is a movie coming out. I'm a trailer guy. I don't know. Are you like this? Like when you go to the movies, you, rare as it is, I do want to watch the trailers. Every once in a while, I'll scroll through on like IMDb and watch trailers of things coming out. I don't know why. I'm kind of a junkie for this.
You like the red line trailers too? That give you the
unvarnished kind of stuff. Yeah, why not? This one, there is a movie coming out called Midway. Figured
there
it was
already was
about
a TV
here.
Movie called Midway.
There was. This is a new movie. It is about the Battle of Midway. I've just watched the teaser trailer as we got things started. It looks like it starts with the Battle of Pearl Harbor and then goes into the story of Midway.
That wasn't really a battle. That was an
ambush.
Attack
on
Pearl
Harbor. They did fight back. Luke Evans and Patrick Wilson and Ed Skrein, Mandy Moore, Woody Harrelson, Dennis Quaid, Aaron Eckhart. Am I getting you interested in this movie?
Antoine Fats Domino.
Hub-Arkish. I mean, they're all, it's a bunch of Brits playing Americans, which always works out well. Patrick Wilson is the guy who was in The Watchmen. He was the Night Owl in Watchmen. He was also the Phantom of the Opera in the movie adaptation a couple of years back. I don't know. Cast looks interesting. The trailer looks like it could be okay, but I mean, since it's about the midday and the midway, I figured we had to
talk
about it.
It's not about the midday.
Yes, it is. No, don't ruin this for me.
If it's called midday, that's different.
It's the teaser trailer, Dan. You don't know that it's not
okay,
about the midday.
It could provide more drops for a new open, though,
if nothing else. Okay. That.
It's from CNN. A collection of ultra expensive supercars worth $13 million. Seized from the extravagant vice president of Equatorial Guinea as part of a corruption probe, will be auctioned in Switzerland later this year.
That's just great.
And I took one look at these cars that are lined up, this tableau of horsepower here. Swiss authorities took the luxury stash of 11 vehicles from Teodoro Nguema Obiang Menge, the son of the Central African nation's longtime leader, in 2016, after an investigation into money laundering. And if you don't know about Equatorial Guinea, it is an incredibly wealthy and inscrutable African nation.
Is that right?
That's because it produces a ton of oil. As Ed Farmer will advise you, drink a lot of oil. And people don't know much about Equatorial Guinea, the oil-rich country.
Almost nothing.
Says they keep a tight lid on information. The anti-corruption NGO Transparency International described the country as too opaque to rank, saying it could not get enough data on it to provide a global corruption index.
Too opaque to rank.
Too opaque to rank, as sung to too legit to quit. That's very nicely done.
Thank you.
Now, you say, what are these cars? Are you interested, car guys? The roadster version of the Lamborghini Veneno, Spanish for venom and Italian for venom, I assume, adorned with the colors of the Italian flag.
Ooh, that's a mean-looking car.
Just one of nine produced to celebrate Lamborghini's 50th anniversary. That's a $5.1 million automobile.
Oh, my God.
Okay. A limited edition La Ferrari, which is the Ferrari of Ferraris. Ferrari literally calls this car the Ferrari. That's estimated to be worth 2.5 million euros. There is a 1,300 horsepower Koenigsegg 1-1, of which seven were ever produced. And I don't know this manufacturer. Koenigsegg 1-1, a McLaren P1, an Aston Martin 177, and a Bugatti Veyron.
Oh, yeah. All right.
None of the cars has racked up more than a few thousand miles. Interested?
Yeah. I mean, right. That'd be kind of... You know, have you ever done or know anybody who's gone to... like Vegas or something like that, you pay a couple of bucks, you can drive or sidecar some of these like real expensive,
I think Terry did it,
cars like this. My brother's done it. I think I remember Terry talking about it some too. And just the way that he explained it to me, just the horsepower that kicks in when you really put it to the floor is kind of life-altering. Like, knowing that something can do that.
It can jump like that.
Yeah, you didn't know that existed until you get in there and do it. Did you know that there is a solar eclipse going on today?
A total eclipse of the heart?
A total eclipse of the heart. However, it is only visible in Chile or Argentina.
Oh, that doesn't help me.
Well, I'm about to, and here's why. Because I thought people that might listen to the Midday Midway would be interested in this. The Exploratorio Museum in San Francisco is going for you. They're going to live stream the whole thing. It begins at 12:30-ish or so. So just about the time Joe Madden and Lawrence are done having their conversation. Okay. You could just, you know, keep Lawrence on. Throw the live stream of this on. I'll tweet out the link. Coverage begins at 1, and it looks like the eclipse will be done by the time the U.S. women's team takes on England. Be a nice little, you know, clip up to your afternoon for you. Listen to Lawrence, kind of watch this thing happen. Seems interesting enough to me. Go watch.
A texter, by the way, wants to know, do they apparently find the actual country of Wakanda? That's what it sounds like. Are the vibranium cars?
It's so tiny, the country. I mean, it's right there, and I had no idea.
Yeah, and Koenigsegg, we're learning the Swedish Elon Musk decided to build hypercars instead of electric ones. So, all right, learning about a bunch
There's
of this
a
stuff.
Swedish Elon Musk?
I guess.
Is he also crazy?
Is he a major loon? There's a show that I would recommend very, very highly, and I think the crossover with the Bernstein and McKnight listener will be kind of ideal here. And I was tipped off to this by none other than our old friend Matt Abaticola, who sent me a text saying, you have to see this show that just came out on Netflix. It's awesome. It's called The Chef Show. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Chef. With
The Matt, Chef with, Show.
Not The Chef Show. That's different. The Chef Show, it is, and the movie Chef is a wonderful little fantasy.
Is that Favreau?
It's Jon Favreau, okay. And Scarlett Johansson and Dustin Hoffman
what's
and Sofia Vergara.
James Gandolfini one where he's a chef.
Is that I don't know, but this is it. I loved the movie Chef. My kids loved the movie. The soundtrack is amazing. It's just a great mix of sort of pan-Latin musicians, all kinds of wonderful Cuban stuff, and it's a story about a chef. It's loosely based on the story of Roy Choi, who was a chef and then became was disillusioned. He became a food truck guy and used social media to blow up his food truck. Well, Roy Choi, who was the technical advisor for the movie Chef, that allowed Jon Favreau to get it right. Uh-huh. So they wanted everything to look right. He wanted to make a movie where no chefs would say, oh, they screwed up all the actual cooking stuff.
Oh,
I love that. Yeah, and I've watched the making of documentary. I've seen all the videos. I've watched all the director's commentaries. So now what they've done is Roy Choi and Jon Favreau are going around the country hanging out in kitchens with some of the coolest chefs doing the coolest stuff, and they're tasting things and they're cooking together, and the chef will show off his skills, and then Favreau and Choi will eat, and then Choi and Favreau will prepare the staff meal for that day for their staff. Ooh. And then it culminates in a dinner with special guests. So the one down in Atlanta, which is the first one that I've seen, they do all kinds of awesome seafood stuff, and they break it down with the recipes, and they talk, and they're really adorable together because Choi and Favreau have become really good friends. And they're almost like a married couple. Like, they give each other little tastes, and, you know, they have a really, really warm vibe together. And Favreau knows his stuff, and they talk about movies, they talk about the food they're eating, and then at the end, here comes Robert Downey Jr. to sit down with them.
Oh, cool.
Here comes Tom Holland to sit down with them. And here come the directors of Iron Man, the director of Spider-Man. These are the same guys that were involved in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah,
and it's all food and stories and behind-the-scenes stuff. It's phenomenal. Skip the Gwyneth Paltrow one because she's a weirdo, and it's all vegetarian. So it's a combination of all vegetarian and weird.
Putting sandwiches.
Is Max the special guest on that one?
Right, and then exactly. And then you shove the sandwich
into a hollow roll in the
hey lady, and take the jade egg, and then you place it in the soup.
So, I just put mustard on it, Chicago.
Right. So I dive into this. It's really slickly produced. There's little there's interstitial bits of animation, and it's very clever. It's really nice. It's on The Chef Show on Netflix.
Mustard on it. This story is actually kind of a cool one. A dad taking aerial drone shots of his three kids while they were playing in the ocean in Florida actually caught something crazy going on and helped everybody while doing it. So dad's flying his drone over the kids while they're swimming, you know, for some home video and stuff like that. What do you think he sees?
I don't know.
He saw a shark. He saw a shark.
Saw a shark.
Heading straight for the swimmer as he flew his Mavic 2 Pro. I don't know anything about the drone world. Gertz is a drone guy.
Did he blow up the shark with a Hellfire missile?
No, that was not. That's the Mavic 3. That has the drone. As soon as I got into the air, he said, I started seeing a shadow moving through the water right toward them. Dan and his wife immediately began screaming for everyone on the beach to flee the sea. I was like, get out, get out. He showed me the frame by frame. Everybody got out. No one was attacked, and the crisis was averted.
Wow. I'll
tweet it out. The New York Post has a couple of shots of it, and it is, I mean, it's classic, like, Planet Earth stuff. The shark is an unmistakable shape.
Yeah.
Yep, there's a couple of swimmers up there, and it looks like the drone can't be more than probably a couple hundred feet up in the air, something like that. So it's evident and obvious that this is what was going on.
Yeah.
So when he comes running up to the beach, get off the beach and get out of the water.
I was a little freaked out last night. We were at a party that the Langham Hotel threw for wedding planners. So, of course, I get to be the plus one at all
right.
the fabulous things. And they're showing off their outdoor patio space. And as we're enjoying our cocktails and talking, I hear this. And there is the photographer was using a drone as part of he was shooting with the drone, but it's this thing like rises up like right out of a movie, and it had a red light and a green light on it, and it totally freaked me out for a moment there.
This is it.
Right, and this is what they do. Like, these sort of high-end event photographers now incorporate drones into their regular work now to get these aerial shots. It's amazing. Freaky. That is the Midday Midway, and the top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
You have professed a little bit of curiosity toward tonight's starter
for
the Chicago Cubs.
Kyle
Hendricks comes back off the injured list, and there could be some ripple effect to the rest of the roster, the rotation, and that's not what needs perhaps the most help. It's the offense and defense and everything else for the Chicago Cubs. We'll get back into that conversation, see what you think about Kyle Hendricks making his start tonight, and what today's set of baseball games may set up in about five. Could be fun as the Cubs and Sox are set to hook up one more time. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.